Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3, and it's time for Tech Talk, where we get analysis on the latest coming out of the tech world. I'm Rachel Kelly, and on the line we have with us Wong Kai, tech contributor from The Straits Times, to give us the lowdown on the tech news that matters to you this week. Kai, let's start off in the US, and seven US members of Congress have called on Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos to testify as part of an antitrust probe into Amazon and other tech giants. The demand follows a Wall Street Journal report that alleged Amazon employees accessed non-public information about the company's third-party sellers to create competing brands. What does this mean, Kai? And did Amazon try and compete with its own sellers?
Long story short, yes, Amazon might have tried to do that. But, you know, taking this as a whole, before we delve into the details, it just shows, you know, how little we don't know about Amazon. The company is huge. It has hundreds of thousands of workers and factory workers.
Mm.
I mean, their workforce is the size of a small Pacific nation. And we still don't know, many of the business practices. And it seems like this week that more of these practices have come to light. So this demand that Bezos appeared before U.S. Congress people, it was from a report from the Wall Street Journal, and actually revealed that Amazon employees on several times accessed data from individual marketplace sellers to help decide which product Amazon would create and sell under its own brand names. So these own brand names, they're known as private label brands. And it seems to contradict a statement that one of their lawyers made to a congressional hearing led by a House antitrust subcommittee that Amazon does not use data from sellers to create its own products. And
right.
It seems that Amazon also... Yeah, so Amazon tried to clarify that later by saying that, we don't use data from individual sellers, but we use aggregate data from multiple sellers. So we don't target any particular seller. Say maybe if that seller was particularly popular in a
mm-hmm.
certain brand. So we just use data from a group, maybe a group of retailers selling.
And they go in and they look
like
and see
products,
what's,
for example.
What's popular, what's selling well, and then possibly create Amazon own brands as a result of that. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, that's right. So it seems that, you know, because Amazon has its own brands, if you look into its catalog, Amazon has something called Amazon Basics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's these things that is sold by the company under their own brand name of perhaps things that people use very frequently. So I was just looking at the Amazon app earlier, and under there they have everything from computer mice to sort of like pet products and even clothes hangers under the Amazon.
Really?
So
okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that they had such a wide gamut of products on sale under the Amazon umbrella.
Oh, Rachel, if you have the time I have, you would be spending as much time on e-commerce websites as I do after work every day, trying to look for the latest deals. So, yes, Amazon does sell stuff under their own brand names, and it stands to reason that, well, if something is selling quite, something's very popular among its customers, Amazon might try to take a slice of that pie.
So do you have any examples of Amazon actually doing something like this? And I'm thinking, you know, from the seller perspective, is there anything that they can do to safeguard their company?
There could be. I mean, Amazon says it has safeguards in place within the company itself to prevent exactly the sorts of these sorts of things happening, so to prevent its staff from accessing what they call non-public information. For example, how much advertising the third-party seller spends on Amazon for each unit, unit of the product that it sells. The report from the Wall Street Journal said that Amazon employees access documents and data about a best-selling car trunk organizer sold by a third-party vendor. And sometime later, Amazon's in-house brand later introduced its own car trunk organizers.
With a very similar appearance, or...?
Exactly. So, it doesn't say, but, you know, it's a little bit coincidental that something as specific as a car trunk organizer, which is probably the last thing on your mind you think about, you think of when you go and browse these websites. But it stands to reason that, you know, maybe Amazon doesn't even have to do that. All they have to do is look at the front page of their website, and, you know, maybe they can see what's the most popular product and sort of take a leaf out of their book, so to speak.
We're speaking to Wong Kaid, tech contributor for The Straits Times. Now, Kaid, moving on, and this is something that really got me thinking. I mean, if you're like me and you're used to logging into your phone via facial recognition, wearing a mask obviously presents a bit of an issue. And I guess it's not just our mobile phones, but, you know, some workplaces or places like airports apply facial recognition to clock in their workers. And with everyone wearing a mask now, this presents a bit of a challenge. Kai, I'm curious, how effective are systems now at recognizing masked faces?
Long story short, probably not good. I love the example that you gave about unlocking your phone during times like this. You know, sometimes we just forget that sometimes technology isn't that smart, right? Like, I go out, I have my mask on, and I bring my phone, I press the power button, I bring it up to my face, and it doesn't unlock because it has no idea who is it staring back at it because I have a mask on, right? It stands to reason that, you know, other more advanced facial recognition software out there, perhaps, like you mentioned, those at airports or those at factories with the clock their workers in, these all primarily rely on, you know, machine learning, on backends that have been trained on hundreds and thousands or even millions of different kinds of faces. But these faces are mostly uncovered. These are uncovered faces without masks, without facial coverings. And now during this pandemic, you have everyone masking up, covering up their faces. And these systems simply do not work. They haven't been trained on recognizing people with face masks. So experts say they're actually, you know, these systems are not very accurate when you compare them to faces that are uncovered. Some systems manufacturers, they say that they have had some partial success with recognizing faces that have been masked.
Okay.
So a founder of Artem Kurahenko is a founder of NTech Lab. So it's a Russian company whose technology is deployed on about 150,000 cameras in Moscow.
Wow.
He says that the company's technology can identify a person wearing a balaclava, a medical mask, or even a hat covering the forehead.
A balaclava, and, because that's that really doesn't leave much. That's pretty much covers everything except for the eyes, right?
Exactly, right, exactly. I mean, if you picture in your mind the stereotypical bank robber, only the eyes are uncovered. How in the world are you going to recognize
that? So they can still find you. Right? They can still find you.
They definitely can. Yes, exactly. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection, this organization, they use facial recognition on travelers boarding international flights at U.S. airports. And they say their technology can also identify masked faces. So some companies, some organizations even are claiming that they can do it. But from what I read, experts are saying it is actually very difficult, firstly, to verify these claims. We don't know the extent of the success rate. Surely not. It's not 100%. It can't be 100% because there aren't that many faces to train these algorithms on. And we don't know the success rate. It could be 60%, 70%, that sort of thing.
But are they looking at further improvements on a mass scale for, say, your iPhone or other facial recognition devices following the pandemic? Is this something that we're seeing more mass market manufacturers looking at?
I think for sure, definitely, if this pandemic is going to drag on, as officials have said, you know, past the end of this year, maybe into next year, it stands to reason that companies and systems manufacturers of facial recognition software have to build this into their systems. Otherwise, it's just going to create, firstly, a lot of problems for people. They have to remove their mask first to get their faces recognized. And, you know, thinking broadly, recognizing faces that are masked up is actually an advancement for technology, right? You don't have to have the full face to recognize the person. So it seems that the systems will be trained on to recognize parts of the face that aren't covered. So when you wear a mask, the bottom half of your face is covered, everything from the nose downwards. So the system might be trained to recognize, say, the space between your eyes or the shape of your nose bridge, for example, or the shape of your forehead.
Interesting. Now, moving on from, you know, the evolution of facial recognition, let's talk about the evolution of something else, a keyboard. Now, Apple on Monday launched an updated version of its MacBook Pro with modified keyboards, addressing criticism that their previous keyboards were prone to failure. You know, Kai, I just purchased a MacBook and I don't have any issues with the keyboard. What were some of the issues that people had with the keyboards and what are some of the improvements that Apple's made now?
So Apple, in all its wisdom, had created a very thin sort of keyboard to match the thinness of the laptops, say maybe about 5 years ago, right? So that generation of laptop was fitted with these very thin butterfly keyboard mechanisms. And at the time, it was, you know, the company touted its engineering prowess in this area. It was a very thin keyboard. It could make its laptops thinner. And, you know, it still retained the feel of a full-size keyboard while making everything very thin. That's what the company was saying. But once the product started getting out to market, there were, you know, some complaints from consumers that the keyboards were sticking. So, for example, if you press the A key down, for example, and if you had a little bit of dirt stuck between the key and the keyboard deck, the key would stick. And it would, and you know, you have this multiple just row and row of A's coming out on your screen, and you had to sort of bang the key again or shake the laptop even just to get the key to stop actuating. And I have had personally this experience on my own MacBook Air from that era.
Right.
And let me tell you, it wasn't fun. Like my own keys, several keys now actually, I actually opened up the keyboard some weeks ago and tried to test it. And aside from my A key, I think my K or L key got stuck. And it's really this stuck feeling. It's very sticky. It's very, the key can't move because the key travel, so how far up and down the key moves, it is already very shallow. And if you have dirt stuck in there, it's going to make like, it's going to feel like the key isn't even moving at all. Apple has finally changed this butterfly mechanism to the more conventional scissor mechanism found literally in the rest of the industry. So, you know, Apple's really never really said that, oh, we're sorry for this debacle. But changing the keyboard mechanism after so many complaints have been received, I guess, is tacit admission that, well, you know, we tried to design something new, but it didn't work, and we're going back to the tried and tested.
So if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Now, speaking of Apple, Kai, I'm sure you've got a fun tech fact for us before we go.
That's right. So mark your calendars on June the 22nd. Apple will be having its Worldwide Developers Conference. And, well, no surprise there, it's going to be online only.
What can we
this
expect?
Massive tech conference usually held is usually held in huge arenas in the US, attracting thousands and thousands of developers for Apple to show off their latest developer-facing features. But now with the pandemic happening all around us, it'll be the first ever online WWDC from Apple. So June 22nd, mark your calendars.
Can anyone attend? Can anyone log in online?
Well, this is going to be paid, obviously. So, no, you know, with all things online, if someone ends up streaming their stream, well, you know, who knows?
Okay. Well, great. Thank you so much for your insights, Kai.
Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah, this is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3, and we've been speaking to Wong Kai, tech contributor for The Straits Times.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.